Music from Finland called Vesi Vasi Lumen Alle, which means water under snow is weary. And it featured the talents of flutist Barbara Duncan, pianist Rachel Jensen, violinist Karen Lee Larson, and Amasong, Champaign Urbana's premier lesbian feminist chorus from the CD called Over Here the Water is Sweet. The conductor was its founding director, Christina Berger, who founded the group in 1990 and stayed with them through 1999 and then took off to places far in between. And she is actually returned to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign this semester to take over the choral program as its interim director of choral activities. And I played that music because those who know Christina locally are most likely to know her in the context of her having founded and directed Amasong. And I would maintain that hers is still the standard that Amasong and its subsequent directors have attempted to live up to. Christina is my guest on this edition of Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for coming in.
I'm so happy to be back here, Kevin. Thank you.
You know, I was delighted to, when I was looking at your personal website, to see that right at the top of it, you had included a link to the last time we talked.
Yeah, on, that was a wonderful conversation.
And I can't remember if it was for this show or if it was when I was still doing the classical program.
I think it was for this show.
Was it for the show? I sort of, things run together. Perhaps it was, did you come back to lead Amasong on occasion of a anniversary or something like that?
I came back for their 20th anniversary. I didn't lead them, but they let me sing a little and they let me bang on a cowbell.
That was very nice of them.
Yes, it was a wonderful evening.
Yeah, well, I said, you know, you left Champaign-Urbana after having led Amasong for all that time and then went other places, which, of course, is the shortest possible way of saying you went initially to New York City, did a lot of stuff in New York City.
Did a lot of stuff.
Went to, Wisconsin.
A couple years ago.
And spent 4 years as a director of choral activities at Carroll College.
Now known as Carroll University.
Is it now? Yeah, they did that in Pennsylvania, where I'm from. They changed all the colleges to universities in any event. And now here you are. But why don't you give us a little thumbnail sketch of why you went to New York and how you got so quickly into some pretty good stuff. Frankly.
Pretty good stuff. Yeah, I went because as I was finishing my doctorate here and looking at the job postings for academic positions for people with their DMA in choral conducting and literature, I wasn't very excited by what I was seeing for the jobs that I would probably perhaps get hired into. It really looked like there might be a halt to my musical growth if I were to immediately take some of the positions that would be available to someone entry level, you know, just having finished the degree. And I was afraid of starting there and moving horizontally. I thought there was more that was going to stretch me if I just threw myself on the open market in New York as a conductor, maybe as a singer. I didn't know how that would work necessarily, but
and what was there about the positions that you thought you might be most likely to get, assuming you got something, that would imply any sort of stagnation?
I think a lot of the jobs, entry-level positions that were usually being posted involved doing the work of specialists in several areas, sort of skimming the surface, maybe doing a bunch of things not so much in depth. You know, also teach music theory and oral skills and, you know, lead the marimba band or whatever. And, you know, every one of those things needs its expert, its specialist to do those. But I wasn't sure that I would be getting the students and the singers of deep preparation and ambition for this art form that I would want to be teaching in a position like that. And I thought, you know, maybe if I get some different kind of street cred, then when I want to come back on the academic market, maybe I can be a little more choosy. It's always been a long-term goal of mine to be primarily a teacher. I love teaching. I come from a family of teachers in the arts and humanities, and I've always known that, you know, that would probably be the most important part of what I would leave behind. And it's certainly true that having gone to New York and done so much work as a singer, as a conductor, as a teacher at Barnard and Columbia and the Manhattan School of Music, that really did position me much better for the full-time academic portion of my career that I just very recently entered. I'm not even speaking just in terms of strategic positioning, but really in terms of what I learned by, you know, being a professional, a performing artist as a conductor and as a as a singer for almost a decade in New York. It was a tremendous education. And I had experiences I never dreamed I would have. And I took the stage with artists I had heard about when I was a little student, you know, and with stars in my eyes, took a deep breath and jumped in the pool. And I'm just so grateful for that time.
So some of those artists you dreamed about,
yeah,
you know, associating with, or at least knew about before, for example?
Oh, Meredith Monk, Bobby McFerrin, shared a billing at Carnegie Hall with Don Upshaw and Richard Good in the ensemble called Pomerium, the Renaissance ensemble that I sing in. Had a night with Luciano Berio and Maurizio Pollini at the 92nd Street Y concert series of Carnegie Perspectives. I mean, I could go on, but
so those are usually sort of things. I mean, if you're, I've interviewed many people involved with various bands and so on,
yeah,
on the show, where what they say is shared the stage with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that usually means like was a warm-up act for or
sure,
participated in a concert on which these people also participated.
Yes, that's right.
So when you say Maurizio Pollini, the great concert
pianist.
Yeah,
I didn't play piano with him.
You didn't perform with him.
I did not.
But,
so a combination of those things. I performed with the Talis Scholars, for example. That would be on the list of artists that I had admired that I ended up working with. The Pollini concert, the Richard Good, Don Upshaw concert, we took turns on stage, you know.
And we was also Pomerium at that point?
Yeah. We did a program at Zankel Hall in Carnegie that Richard Good was curating, and it was a program focused on extreme chromaticism. So he played some very chromatic selections from Bach's Well-Tempered, as well as Berg Piano Sonata. And then with Don Upshaw, he performed Schoenberg's Book of the Hanging Gardens, and Pomerium sang madrigals of Carlo Gesualdo.
Tell me, Pomerium's one of the groups that you were doing singing with in New York and are still regularly or sometimes?
Yeah, regularly. I sometimes can't make every concert, but I didn't miss too many last year except when I got pneumonia. So,
oh, I did that once recently.
So
tell me about Pomerium. So early music specialists?
Sure. Yeah. The director is Alexander Blatchley, who is director of choral activities at Notre Dame. But he came out of Columbia. He studied with Richard Taruskin, and he was really sort of on the ground floor of creating modern performing editions of so much Renaissance polyphony. And Pomerium actually celebrated its 40th anniversary last spring. So they've been going for a while. I joined them in 2001. And I won't stop until somebody forces me to.
Ensemble of what size?
15 at the most. We have a show of Burgundian polyphony that we toured with about 7 or 8 singers, but usually between 12 and 15. And, you know, we sing the music from the great Renaissance cathedrals, a lot of motets and mass parts, but also we've done some programs in secular music as well.
Here's a sample by Orlando Lassus. Orlando de Lasso, I mean, he's got de Lasso, he's got so many different versions of his name. Orlando de Lasso is how you list it here. Vide Homo, which means?
Oh, behold the man. This is actually the words, they're apocryphal, but they're the words of Jesus on the cross. And, you know, he says, look at the man who is suffering for you. And he's very much pointing a guilty finger at the sinners who have no idea what they did to put him in that situation or how bad they should feel about it. This is sort of an interesting motet because the voices, there are often only 2 or 3 parts singing at a time. You can sort of hear the texture just sort of unravel and disappear. Most of the time, the highest part you hear is my voice with that of Elizabeth Baber, wonderful soprano in New York City.
The ensemble Pomerium, music by Orlando de Lasso, including, as it's one of its members, Christina Berger, my guest here on Live and Local. the ensemble called Pomerium, which included, as one of its members, Christina Berger, my guest here on Live and Local, an example of Renaissance polyphony by Orlando Di Lasso, Vide Omo, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Christina is with us today because she's one of these occasional folks who goes, gets all her degrees at a particular university, and many years later comes back to teach at that university. Some universities don't ever let that happen. You know, they have almost policies, I've heard, against hiring their own people. Other universities, such as where I went, Northwestern, where it seems the School of Music is full of Northwestern graduates. You know, Christina's back to as the interim director, at least perhaps temporarily interim director. You never know how things will go, of the choral program at the university. And thanks again for coming back. Let me know in advance that you were coming back. And classes have, for you have technically not quite started. You got auditions going on for both of the groups you're conducting on campus, which are?
Yeah, that's right. I'll be conducting the U of I Chorale and the Oratorio Society. But the whole other members of the choral faculty and I are hearing auditions for all those groups. So it's just wall to wall this week. But real instruction starts next week for us.
Tell me about the two ensembles. They have quite different purposes, I think.
Sure. Well, the U of I Chorale intends to serve really the most capable singers, musicians, and vocalists. It's open to students, both graduate and undergraduate. And, you know, with that group, I'm looking forward to exploring the widest variety of repertoire reasonable for the voices that I have.
You say open to students, graduate and undergraduate, meaning music students or anybody?
Primarily, most of our members will be music students, but we also take non-music students, and we will have some of those, absolutely. And we will be working mostly unaccompanied, doing mostly, you know, music for voices together. But the Oratorio Society, as I'm sure so many of your listeners know, is a group that is open to everybody in the community and that prepares large masterworks and often performs with the symphony orchestras we have in town, the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, the U of I Symphony, and the Sinfonia da Camera.
So when you say large masterworks, meaning pieces that are generally done with orchestra. I mean, they're not going to prepare a cappella stuff.
Well, you know, I have a little idea for the Pizzetti Requiem in the back of my mind for
the future.
Should that become an issue.
But, Wonderful piece.
Yes, I'm not trying. I try to talk about what I'm doing without limiting my possibilities, you know. But generally, that's the case, yeah. Music for orchestra and chorus. Sure.
So coming in as an interim.
Well, and in fact, but in the spring, I'll be featuring the Oratorio Society in Symphony of Psalms by Stravinsky, which, as you know, does not a full concert make. So another portion of that concert will be taken by the U of I Symphony, and then another portion of it will be the Oratorio Society singing a cappella Russian liturgical music.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I wouldn't want to sit here and say that you're never going to hear the OS a cappella.
Because you already know that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is something different than, at least as I recall, has happened since I've been around, but maybe other things have. So as the interim director, what do you see as your role under the assumption that you'll be here for, what, a year and gone?
Right. You know, I think that I was asked here because of the strengths that I bring, so I need to have those in evidence immediately. And I think, in part, that's the eclecticism of style that interests me, that I'm capable of working in, from early music to new commissions, and village harmony from other parts of the globe. So that's the first thing. I think also I'm known as a very effective, engaging, and enjoyable rehearsalist, for whom people are eager to sing who gets good results. And so I think that in a time of transition, such as this one, after the retirement of a director who's been here for a while, I think it's important to the school to maintain a good feeling about what's happening in the program, even while things are changing. And so I suppose it was thought that I would be able to do that. And I'm hoping that the school will find itself interested in a lot of the new music and the new composers writing for vocal ensemble and the gifts that today's singers are bringing to vocal ensemble music, all of that that I encountered in New York that I'm not sure is quite so familiar to everybody here. There's a whole world out there that's extremely vibrant. And you know, in the recent years, we've had two of the last Pulitzer Prizes go to works for vocal ensemble. People who can sing and read their scores and sing together are getting a lot of very exciting work. And, you know, I log on to Facebook and it kills me because all the people I would be singing with were I still there are all over the world all the time having a great time. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss that. But you can't have everything all at once, all at the same time.
So elaborate on that a little. Elaborate that comment about Facebook a little bit. When you say people with whom you were singing are with their ensembles all over the world or as individuals all over the world? Or?
Mostly in ensembles, certainly. I mean, they have their own projects as soloists as well. And sometimes it's an individual who's off with an opera company or, you know, doing a recital or whatever. Of course, I know these people in terms of ensemble work because I'm an ensemble singer professionally. And I was so fortunate to encounter these incredible singers in all these different groups that I sang with. They, and not I, because I don't have that training, are also, you know, they have large portions of their career where they're solo recitalists or they're doing cabaret or they're premiering new opera or working at the Lyric or the Met. But at the same time, they also really love to sing, you know, in ensemble with other people. And so I had the benefit of those voices and that kind of musicianship in my life on a regular basis. And it really elevated my skills.
From your point of view, as a singer yourself and now, well, for some good long time now, as a teacher of choral music, and I assume you've done plenty of voice training, individual voice training.
I've not had so much actually. I wasn't really able to access a sustained program of formal training.
Well, but I mean, where you've been doing some of the teaching of voices.
I teach voices to. I mean, my job as a ensembles director is to do group vocal pedagogy every time I'm with my singers, no question. And you know, I learned a few really fine fundamentals in a couple of lessons that I had way back. I think my huge love of singing and my huge love of the repertoire for singing with other people somehow, you know, made of me a serviceable singer. I was able to, you know, pay a New York mortgage with those chops, and that was enough. I mean, there are certain technical things that I can't do that had I studied voice as my primary focus, I hope I would have learned to do. And, you know, I know where I can't hold a candle to some of my colleagues.
So you're not
going to see me on the opera stage,
right? But from your point of view as a vocal ensemble mm-hmm. singer, and as a teacher of choirs, mm-hmm. What is in it for the singer who thinks he or she's going to be a soloist? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For singing in a vocal ensemble.
Sure.
And how do they, would they need to approach singing differently to do that?
Well, they just need good stewardship of their natural, healthy voice. And certainly to get through a full workday as a professional singer, you have to be singing in a balanced and natural and proper way, or you're just going to poop out for the many hours. And so it's my job to encourage the people that I work with in that kind of singing, because first of all, the music needs that from them. You know, the music isn't going to sound good if we aren't getting that from them. But, you know, in more material terms, what's in it for a training singer is the ability to get a lot of work. If you want to get paid to sing and you don't get that role, what are you going to do in the meantime? Who's going to pay you to sing what? But if you can read a score and you can sing with other people in a stylistic, you know, stylistically compelling way, if you know how to match your phrasing with someone else, if you know how to tune yourself to other singers, there's a lot of work out there. And it's actually very exciting and beautiful as well.
So vocal ensemble singing does pay.
Oh, it pays. Like I said, it paid my New York mortgage.
Yeah. I mean, I say that with a certain amount of surprise.
It doesn't pay everywhere. I mean, it depends on where you live, you know. You have to live in a metropolitan center where there's a lot of art going on. of course, which is, you know, true for so many specialties within music, within the arts. You've got to be in a vibrant urban center. I think you can make it in St. Paul, Minneapolis, you know, as a singer full-time probably. And I think San Francisco, you can do it. Boston, you can do it. You know, you're not going to be able to do it in Mattoon.
Probably not, or even for that matter in Champaign-Urbana, you know, with a lot of things going
on
here. You have mentioned earlier that you think you were brought here to university, or assume you were brought here to university because of your various strengths. I mean, one would hope that would be true. Yeah. Otherwise, why would they do it? And among those is doing some of what you did with Amisong.
Mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
was, you used the term village harmony.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd play maybe two recordings here, mm-hmm. not back to back, of pieces, performances by a group that you directed for, I think, about the same amount of time that you did Amisong.
Exactly Amisong, the same amount of time, 9 years, yeah.
Called Cairdorian, mm-hmm. am I saying it right?
Yeah, it's close enough.
Tell me about them.
Sure. This is, you know, there are many very fine volunteer choruses in the New York area, and this is one of those that's been very highly regarded for quite some time. It was founded by an extremely talented singer and conductor named Suzanne Peck. And I conducted them, from 2000 to 2009. And some of these people are music professionals in other areas, like pianists or composers. And we have lawyers and nurses in the group and music teachers. So it's a volunteer ensemble, but quite high performing. And you know, I did Copland's In the Beginning with them. I did the Brahms motets. I did, I think, what you're going to cue up, a little village song from Bulgaria. I did Beatles arrangements. I mean, you know, everything that's beautiful for combined voices, we really enjoyed doing.
Well, I thought I'd start with the village, the village harmony from Bulgaria, partly because this particular recording happens to be only the women of the group.
It does, yeah.
By way of transition from our earlier conversation about Amisong, and then we'll do something else from them. Christina Berger is my guest here on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. She's the new interim director of choral activities at the University of Illinois. music from Bulgaria called, I'm going to let Christina pronounce it because I might get it wrong.
Sobrali Sase.
You know, you always toss these things off as if it's so easy.
I might be wrong. My apologies to my colleague Donna Buchanan if I've messed that up.
The women of the ensemble called Cerdorian. What does that mean?
That's a Welsh word. It means musicians. The founder of the group came from a Welsh family, so that's
okay,
the name
just
she
out of
chose,
curiosity. Yeah. Christina Berger conducting. She's my guest here on Live and Local as the interim director of choral activities at the University of Illinois, so she has come back to her academic roots. And our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring the new exhibit, the James Bond theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love Another Day. More information is available at SousaArchives.org. So I said I wanted to, you know, play a couple of recordings back to back. We're going to actually use a different ensemble. So that music, an example of one type of composition for which you've made a certain reputation and have made done a lot of, beginning with Amasong, which mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. to say music, folk music from around the world. Or you've used a different term for that sort of music, I think.
You know, every word has its problems. Lately, I've been saying village harmony because I really like it. I like what it evokes, you know, the image of people who share a communal life together, raising their voices in harmony. I think that works.
And then there's music, such as what we generally hear in choral music, which, of course, is music specifically composed for a choir of some level or another, which has been happening since the Renaissance. We heard an example a little bit ago. And especially for the context of some of what you want to do at the university here
sure.
and what you have done in your
sure.
previous university positions, new music, new works for choir.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you look for when you're commissioning, because we're going to hear a piece that you've commissioned, what do you look for from a composer, from the piece? You know, if let's say, for example, this guy, Jonathan David, whose mm-hmm. music we're going to hear next. Mm-hmm. What did you say to him when you said, I want you to write me something?
Well, I knew Jonathan. I knew his compositions. He's performed quite widely among choral societies in New York City, in any case. And we had sung in some projects together, and I conducted other pieces of his. And I knew that he, as an ensemble singer himself, had a very good sense for the voice and for voices together. And I liked his language, and I knew that I could give him specific parameters, and he would be able to remain within those and make us something that would be beautiful. So I had my administration at Carroll University wanted me to take my students abroad on a concert tour. And so I thought, I had recently been in Italy, and I had been in this town in Umbria called Todi, and found that it was the birthplace and the memorial place of this monk, Jacopone, to whom is credited the Stabat Mater sequence. Stabat Mater Dolorosa. And I thought, how interesting. I decided I wanted to create a concert touring program based on that chant. And
a whole program?
Pretty much a whole program. And also having connections to other sites that I would visit with my singers. So we opened our concert program with the original chant from the medieval period. And then we sang Stabat Mater arrangements or compositions from many different styles and eras. And then we presented the newest Stabat Mater, which is the one that I asked Jonathan David to make for us. And I asked him to use either all 20 verses or the verses he wanted to use. I didn't put a condition on that. But I asked him to find some way to use the original chant materials in the new composition, use it as a cantus firmus in some way at some point. And then I told him about the strengths and the limitations of the particular voices that I was working with. A liberal arts-based university ensemble, mostly not of music majors. So, you know, I told him ranges and how much division of the voices we could hope to sustain. And he wrote not only very intelligently for us, but very, very beautifully. And it's a good long piece. It's almost 15 minutes, but I have a little extract. We could go from the beginning, about 3 or 4 minutes in. And what you're going to hear is our performance in the church where this monk, Jacopone, is actually buried and memorialized. It's a 7th century building up on top of a hill. It's called the Tempio di San Fortunato. and it's got about a 7-year reverb. And it was wonderful to watch my students discover these cathedrals and chapels and the kind of sound that the composers were writing for in these churches, you know, and you'll be able to hear it happening. And I think it's clear that the composer had that acoustic in mind as well when he wrote. So this is these are the words. It's a poem that reflects on the Mother Mary weeping at the foot of her son's cross. So it's, you know, very depressing and penitential and deeply contemplative and sometimes a little horrifying.
I think we're starting about a minute in. It's Jonathan
Davis. I think
that's
wrong. I don't know. Yeah. Try it. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
My notes are ambiguous here. I'm sorry. Try that. See what happens.
Christina Berger conducting the Carroll University Concert Choir here on Live and Local. Going back to the beginning, she says, hold on one moment.
Sorry, folks.
Thank you. and that the piece does not stop there.
No,
but
it develops.
We're just stopping there.
Yeah.
It's music by Jonathan David called, a setting of Stabat Mater. The Carroll University Concert Choir in Wisconsin, led by Christina Berger, my guest here on Live and Local here on FM 90.9, where our program is made possible with support from Krannert Art Museum, presenting a public opening reception for 5 fall exhibitions on Thursday, August 29th from 6 to 7 p.m., with opening comments by exhibiting artist Robert Warner at 6 p.m. Galleries will remain open until 9 p.m. You're right. It's a really beautiful piece. Really
mm-hmm.
beautiful writing. Was it
mm-hmm.
difficult?
Well, that's such a relative term. It was the most extensive and challenging and complex piece my students had the privilege to work on, and they really rose to the challenge. I mean, they had a huge amount of pride in the idea that it had been written for them, and only if they did a good job would the composer's dreams be fulfilled, you know. So we worked on that for a long time. I gave it a whole semester, and we performed it halfway in progress, midway through the semester, just so that, you know, they would keep building their competence on it for a long time. I mean, these are students without training in notation, without training in the use of their vocal instruments. So it was a big, big chunk of work to do. But it was good, hard work. And the result was deeply satisfying. I will tell you that the composer traveled with us on tour and sang in the tenor section. And he was just reduced to tears when he first heard our performance of the piece, and then again later, to be standing over the tomb of this, you know, 13th century poet whose words he had been working with for the year. He was so moved by that experience. And for my students to see that, many students who'd not been too far out of their small towns in Wisconsin, to encounter all this history and this intercommunication of the visual and the literate and the architectural and the musical arts, and the connection of tradition from a guy who's been dead for many centuries to a living artist, what that meant to Jonathan, for my students to be a part of that was really transformative for them. It certainly ranks among the most rewarding experiences I've had as a musician ever.
Which is saying something, because you've had a lot.
Yeah, I have it a lot, yeah. You just keep moving to that next one. You just keep reaching for the next peak experience, you know. We're striving for it always, and we're either ecstatic or completely demoralized in every moment, you know. But you keep reaching for the next moment of ecstasy. But this was a good, long, extended, ecstatic moment for us.
Well, speaking of sort of what I could imagine could be an ecstatic moment for you,
mm-hmm.
is to come back to the place mm-hmm. where you were trained.
Yeah,
I mean, most people do their, or at least many, probably most people do their undergraduate one place, their master's somewhere else. If they go on and get a doctorate, it might be somewhere
mm-hmm,
else.
Mm-hmm.
You did your undergraduate, master's degree, doctorate here at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And I know that Fred Stoltzfus, who just retired mm-hmm. from the choral program, which is why you're here as an interim, I know when he got here, because he got here the same year I got here,
yeah,
which
we
was
1991. We all started together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to come back and to lead this program that grew you, so to speak?
Yeah, it would be, I couldn't probably overstate the importance of it. And not only did I go through 12 years of school here, but I lived here for 17 years, you know, and I put down really strong roots out in the community as well as at the school. And when you opened this show, Kevin, you asked, and I didn't answer the question yet, but you asked how was it possible that I went to New York and had this incredible array of experiences at such a level? And the answer is that I came out of this school so well prepared. I was prepared in great depth in my particular specialty, but I had sampled from the expertise of people in all the other departments. And I just felt like I was ready for anything that anybody would try to hire me to do.
It was, the other music departments, specifically.
Yeah, you know, composition, ethnomusicology, pay attention, you know, historical musicology. You got to pay attention to all of it, because if you want to work every day, you've got to be flexible. And for me, that's always been a great pleasure. I mean, I can't, you know, I can never seem to stick to doing one thing or one style. I like to compose, I like to conduct, I like to sing, I've got to teach. Well, if you want to do everything, you need to be prepared to do everything. But I really received marvelous preparation here during those years. I came here as a pianist in 1983, and I had had a tremendous teacher, Annie Schurter, who remains the greatest musical influence on my life. So when I came here, I was ready, but I sampled from everything I could get while I was here, broadly and deeply. And so to come back and bring the fruits of that to today's students really means a great deal to me. I mean, the timing of when to stop being a freelancer and to go for those full-time jobs was a little tricky, but you know, you want to be a certain age and at a certain level of maturity in the field, but then you also don't want to be too old, you know. And I can conduct almost forever, and I can teach forever, but I can't sing forever, and I can't run around on the subway to 10 different jobs every day forever either. It was the right time to really devote myself to my teaching. And I just feel so strongly that after I'm dead, there, and those of us who love what we do, who do it so well, after we're dead, there's got to be the next generation who's ready to take that ball and run with it, you know, to the next level.
What do you imagine you might do differently than what your mentors did? I mean, you worked with Chester Allwish, mm-hmm. in the program with Fred Stoltzfus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You gained enormously from them, but you mm-hmm. also said you went away, mm-hmm. you took what they gave you, and you're coming back with a whole nother set of skills and experiences that I would venture to say neither one of them had.
Oh, I think that's very true, and that's to no one's discredit. It's the nature of being part of another generation.
You took off in a different direction.
And going, you know, somewhere else. But I think I have my finger close on the pulse of a lot of music that's emerging right now that's very exciting, and a lot of musicians who are just doing a lot of creative work of excellence. And, you know, I'm seeing them regularly. I'm still performing with them or in touch with them. And so I think there are these new voices compositionally that I'm eager for my students here to hear. I've done a lot of work re-envisioning the position of the choral conductor as a coach rather than someone who is standing waving arms as a traffic cop. Now, there's music that needs that from us, and there are ensembles that need that from us, but there's a lot of music that doesn't need that from us. That needs the people who are doing the singing to embody their understanding of the score and to listen to one another and respond to one another without an intermediary waving her arms. And I worked extensively, I mean, I sang with Western Wind for 9 years, 6 singers, we sang unconducted. I was hired as a guest director of Chanticleer because of my expertise in working with unconducted, unaccompanied vocal chamber music. And that's a model that I think could be applied a little more broadly. I don't think we always have to be standing there doing stuff as though it depends on us. And if, to the extent that my students can feel that they depend on themselves and one another to do their performing, I'm happy. In my last job at Carroll University, I was sitting down in a chair as often as I was standing on the podium while my students were performing.
Well, you sort of led into the next recording I wanted to play, almost accidentally here, and that is one in which you actually list yourself on the sheet you gave me as the coach. Mm-hmm. Not as the director. And this is one of those ensembles that does not perform with a conductor.
Right.
But I hadn't realized, I guess, until you told me that they have a director, at least in rehearsals. And it may be a different director from the, from piece to piece as they're learning one. And that is the group you mentioned, the all-male ensemble, mm-hmm. Chanticleer.
Yeah, I really consider them the premier vocal chamber group. I mean, that's a standard you can't surpass. And you might not, the full power of their tools are on display in the Bay Area in their concert series, where they do some music that they won't be heard to tour when they're out in the rest of the country. But I was hired to help them prepare a very complex score for their local and very discerning audiences. And it called on the most and the best of everything that I knew as a musician and as an organizer of other musicians. It was really thrilling to be involved in that. This is a piece by Shulamit Ron. It's an excerpt. It's her Credo Anima Min. And I must say that I'm not authorized, I don't think, to play over the air the actual version of this that I coached, because it's not been released on a CD. This is a former incarnation with different singers and an abridged version, but it gives you an idea of what I would call premier vocal chamber music performing and brilliant composition for that instrument.
So this is still Chanticleer, just a previous version of Chanticleer.
Yes, but it's
different.
Yes,
members.
And it's an abridged version of the piece that I worked on with them when they were ready to do it in its complete in its complete form.
Okay, so let's listen to the piece, mm-hmm. or, well, part of the piece, a couple minutes of, yeah. Of a piece that goes for a while.
Yes.
By Shulamit Ron here on Live and Local. A portion of a piece called Credo Anima Amin by Shulamit Ron, performed by Chanticleer, a piece that was coached by Christina Berger, who's my guest here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. She's the new interim director of choral activities at the University of Illinois. That's the strange thing to say, the new interim. You never have an old interim unless right. It was a previous interim.
And know? Anyway, I'm old in every sense of the term here in Champaign-Urbana.
So. Oh, let's not go there. But Christina coming back after 23 years away.
No,
23 years from the time you started Amazon.
Well, let me put That's it in different terms for you.
Go
That's right,
right. Ahead.
I was away for 13 years, but let's look at it this way. When I first came to this campus as a student, exactly 30 years ago.
How about that? Your 30-year reunion, 30-year yeah. reunion at the University of Illinois. Well, mm-hmm. it's been nice to have you back. I mean, when we talked last, I think you were on the phone.
That's right, we did it on the phone.
And now you're across the studio with yeah. me, and I'm sure we'll have you back talking about Good. Some of the concerts coming up by the chorale.
Yes, October 25th, 7:30 p.m. in Krannert.
And the University of Illinois Oratorio Society.
Yes, Verdi Requiem, November 21st with the Sinfonia da Camera.
Not a small undertaking.
Nope.
And other things as the semester continues. Welcome back to Champaign-Urbana.
Thanks, Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9, and we're going to go out here with... give me a second here to cue up this track.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I have it. With a piece that comes... You mentioned Bobby McFerrin earlier,
right.
somebody that you got to perform with, and this is a recording.
I never saw the man, actually.
I
have worked for him, but I never met him.
Really?
We were just all in the studio, you know, laying down 10 million tracks in isolation, wearing the cans. You know.
The cans, meaning the headphones.
Yes.
So a lot of fine singers from the New York area.
Yes, all my colleagues on this record.
Tell me about the piece.
It's actually a huge compositional extension by Roger Treese of a number that will be familiar to McFerrin fans from an earlier record.
And I hope this is it. It says it's a little longer.
Should be track number one. Whatever.
Track
Just turn
number
it on.
One.
Oh no! Not on, sorry. That's
track
on the original.
Number nine is what.
You're
I
mean. Right. You're
okay.
Right.
In
Go
any
for
event,
it. That's it.
It's Live and Local. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'll be back with another show tomorrow at 4:00.